a shot in the dark. Where he sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 256. Counter Position on the road. And you're thinking to yourself, what is this sound? Listen to this beautiful sound. Is that, no, it's not static. It's not a fan. It's that, ladies and gentlemen, is the glorious, beautiful, mind-bogglingly awesome Pacific Ocean, ladies and gentlemen. That's what that is. I am in Ventura, California, coming to you live, and we're doing the counter position. So I know what you're thinking. That's right. It's the beach episode. So we're going to have the beach episode today. I am at the beach at next to the Pacific Ocean in my old stomping grounds of Ventura, California. And so there we go. I am watching. Man, the waves are amazing today. It's like really. See, surfing is a winter sport, especially in Ventura. People think of like, oh, summertime surfing. And people like to, you know, get out in the waves in the summertime. It cools you down when it's hot and all that. But I mean, really, surfing in America, but definitely in the Central Coast of California, is a winter sport. It's like the swell only gets really good and consistently in the winter, and this and the surf is really good today. It's I thought it was going to be all blown out because I looked at the Weather Channel on my phone and it said that there was wind advisories and all this stuff, but evidently not. Evidently, it's a little choppy. I mean, there's some wind, there's choppy, but there's some really beautifully formed waves and pretty good size. I see shortboarders out, catching big waves and even catching some airs and stuff. I mean, this is normally just only longboard country, you know? But in the wintertime, it gets, you can catch some, serious waves. So, yeah, I'm kind of stoked. I'm sitting up way north of town up on, and not a place where, Ventura is not really known for its beach breaks, but as far as I know, but this is a beach break and it's the way the swell is, it's popping. And there's a bunch of surfers where you don't normally see surfers, at least maybe in the wintertime you do, but in the summertime you would never see people surfing this far north up this exit. And so there you go. There's a surf report. Ventura is got some nice clean waves happening. Probably right about head high in times, overhead high at points I've seen. And there's the counter position surf report. If you're listening in Southern California, well then you know what kind of waves you missed in Ventura today. All right, so came out multiple reasons. Number one, as is my custom on my feast day, I come to California. Yesterday was the Feast of St. Andrew. And, we went and saw Over the Rhine at the Troubadour last night, and I'm going to talk about that. But, yesterday I got up and, I only got like 5.5 hours sleep. I didn't start packing early enough, and just as it does, I'm optimistic about how long things are going to take, and then things go wrong and then things take longer. Not unlike today's episode. Sorry, Jennifer. Well, see, there was these things that I needed called batteries, and I kind of forgot that I might need batteries. So, that happened. So, yes, I'm that amateur at this. I'm amateur enough to forget that we needed batteries. Yesterday, got up after like 5.5 hours sleep, and shout out to Perry West, the lovely and talented Perry West, gave me a ride down to the train. Oh man, there's a big bee trying to get into my car. I'm sitting in the passenger seat of my rental car doing the show here at the beach because there was nothing but like rocks, and it was a little too loud out there. But if we're, it may get, if you hear it get like a lot of scuffling and then it gets louder all of a sudden, you will realize that I'm being attacked by a giant bee. So Perry took me down to the train, and I tell you what, forever I was just anticipating this train to the plane, and I'll tell you what, it's great. I hate driving to the airport. I hate parking. I hate waiting on stupid shuttles out at the airport and all that. And you just, you know, usually I have to take an Uber, but Perry stepped up because Perry was going to his cobbler. Perry has a cobbler. I guess maybe he just had some shoes repaired, but it sounded cooler than that. Like, oh yeah, I got to go see my cobbler this morning, pick up my shoes. So I'm just building the myth that is the songwriter of songwriter Perry West. He had to go to his cobbler. He's got like this guy that like custom builds his shoes, and because he's too deep to buy shoes off the rack. No, I'm kidding. I think he just had like some broken shoes or something. And so he dropped me off at Union Station, and I was able to get in, grab a coffee real fast, and get on the train by 7:30. And you just sit and read and hang out and do your thing. And you're on a train, and then a train like pulls right into basically into the airport. Like it pulls almost into the terminal. Like it's great. It's so convenient. I'm a giant fan. So dear Denver, Colorado, thank you for the A-line. And it pulls in like to this really beautiful hotel that they've, you know, and it's funny. I was looking on, this is kind of an aside, I'm in travel mood. You know, here lately I've been on this travel kick because I'm like traveling a lot. My business and my apostolate, my consulting company, is taking me all over God and creation right now. And so I've been on planes and stuff way more often than I normally am. I think out of the last 8 weekends, I've traveled 6, I think, is about, I'd have to look at the calendar, but and these are like 4 or 5 day trips that I take. It's just insane. And so I've been on this kick. So rocketmiles.com, I should totally send them an invoice. I'm always talking about rocketmiles.com. rocketmiles.com, this lady on a plane turned me on to it. We were just talking about travel hacks and stuff and like ways to get more miles and stuff. And so you go to rocketmiles.com and you like book a hotel room, and they give you like an insane amount of miles for your program. So I'm on United. And so there's, you can just get like insane. And so usually it's like, you know, your normal price of hotel, 100 to 130, something like 140 bucks, you know, for, you know, $80 to 120 bucks or something like that, you know. And then you get like 1,000 miles, maybe 2,000 miles. Well, there's some these weird, crazy deals I bumped into just kind of poking around on rocketmiles.com. And that big hotel, the Westin, the new Westin out at Denver International, it looks like kind of like a big whale tail made out of glass. It's beautiful. That thing is $267 a night. Okay, now that's an expensive hotel room, no doubt. But you get like 19,000 miles. It's like you buy a hotel room and you almost get a one-way ticket on United. It's like it's an immense amount of miles. So I keep threatening to one of these days, if I need to buy some miles to cash something in, instead of buying miles, I'm just gonna go stay in the Westin and just like get my free 19,000 miles, because 19,000 miles would cost more than that anyway. So you might as well have the hotel. So yeah, so it pulls right into that hotel, and so I got this there's a customer of mine named Carrie. If I don't know if you would ever listen, Carrie, but shout out to you, Carrie. And she was told me something that I had never thought about, that those tickets that you buy for the train to go to the airport, they're good for like 24 hours. So she was telling me a friend of hers just like sets their used ticket over by where you buy tickets at, and people can just kind of pick them up. And that explains it. Remember, if you listen, I told you the story about the kid that I thought was going to try to bum off of me. And then so I saw him, people giving him something. And then he turned around and gave me something, and it was a ticket to the train. Remember that story? Anybody? turns out that's what happened. People get off the trains, see people coming down, and give them their tickets. And I mean, no, they're just going to throw it away, right? So, and I don't know. It's probably, they probably don't like for you to do that because they want to make money on the train. But I had this ticket with 24 and a half, 23 and plus hours left on it. And there was a dude that looked like he just didn't have much money getting off of, coming out of security, you know, coming out of the airport and going towards the escalators. And the only really thing down those escalators is this train. So I'm like, you know, hey, bro, you going on the train? And he was like, yeah. And I'm just like, here you go. And I handed him a ticket. And he just looked at me like, I mean, he just smiled. I mean, it just like made the dude's day. And it was nothing. I mean, I was going to throw it away, right? So I don't know. If you go, that's a, I don't know what that's about. I don't know if I want to, I don't want to go on a big riff about how good it feels to do something nice for somebody. But there you go. And I'm not bragging because it's not like I paid the same amount of money either way. I just like gave the dude a ticket instead of throwing it away. So it's not like it was any skin off my back or any money out of my pocket, you know. But I don't know. It felt good. I think I know it's this blinding flash of the obvious, right? It, you know, when you're not a horrible human being and you do nice things for other people, it feels good. I'm figuring that out. I already knew that, but yeah. All right, so here we are, Ventura, California, counter position on the road, and let's go off to the break. And when we get back, after just a little more chatty chat, I want to dig into a few insights that I've had since I've been on the road here in California. And so we'll see you when we get back.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, and we are rocking the Ventura, California Beachisode today. Wasn't that the third Beachisode I've done on The Counter Position? I think so. So it's interesting. So I just now pulled out my notes. I hadn't opened my notes yet. I totally forgot something I wanted to talk about, but it kind of fits in to what I was going to switch it to. So, you know, it's like last weekend, I spent a lot of time reading my journals from the 90s. And I talked about that on the show, just kind of seeing who I was and kind of spending some time. But that kind of stopped with my first year out here. And so it was interesting. I haven't kind of picked up the thread. I kind of meant to bring some of my journals, a journal or two, because they're, you know, from the next little phase with me out here where for when I lived here. And I just didn't do it. So, but I've just kind of been thinking about kind of idealistically kind of looking at, you know, not idealistically in the past, but kind of everything's kind of going really, really well. You know, a lot of beautiful stuff happening in my life. And after a lot of frustration for a while, and this is so much providence happening, all this stuff around Flint, Michigan that I'm working on, and there's all kinds of beautiful stuff. Just God's like really active in my life right now, and it's just, it's heartening. I kind of needed it. And so my feast day, ever since 2005, when I had this big crazy experience, it's been kind of a really active day. God likes to do huge stuff to me on my feast day or right thereabouts. But definitely sometimes right on the feast day. It's like I could just sit and list all the crazy stuff that's happened on my feast day. So I was kind of anticipating, you know, this big kind of like culmination of the blessing that's been happening, and it was just going to be this ideal thing. And if you heard the last show, I was like so stoked on kind of like all these old travel hacks coming together right now, and how normally travel is such a pain in the butt for me, and then it was going to be good and easy. And kind of, I was looking for the, I was just really up for like this beautiful idealistic weekend in Ventura. I mean, it's been good, but so I wake up yesterday and my Achilles tendon in my left foot is just like killing me. Like, just, I don't know, this arthritis thing I get, what, I don't know, maybe I pulled it. I don't know. But like my left Achilles tendon is like in crazy pain. Is that a helicopter? All right. So we have a random helicopter going over. So I woke up like in pain. I'm like, okay, great. So I was running behind. This is before, this is the part that I forgot before Perry taking me down to the Union Station. So I'm in pain, right? And then as I get up and I finish packing everything, and it's just like one of the shirts I always take when I travel and stuff, like just have, for some reason, it's had like all these random stains all over it. So I'm like, oh gosh. So I had to kind of replan my, like, you know, because I, you know, when you have clothes as big as mine, you, you can only fit so many of them in that suitcase. And so I'm a man of substance, as I like to say. And so that was no big deal. So I got out there. I'm like, great. I guess I get to limp through an airport, but no big. I'm not going to have to stand in the security, and I have a great seat on the plane, and no big. So I get on the train, and as I'm about to get on the train, I get a text from my new employee saying, hey, the steam wands don't work on the machine. So I was already kind of nervous because I'm leaving a brand new employee that's just kind of barely trained behind the bar. And now there's a machine problem. So, oh my gosh. And I'm like, really? Really? And I swear, we bought this used espresso machine almost 5 years ago. And we've only had four or five, like, little service calls on it. I think three of those five service calls, maybe four of those five service calls, have happened while I'm out of town. It's like my machine waits for me to leave and then breaks down. It's like it won't break down while I'm watching. It's just the weirdest thing. I am almost never there. I'm usually in a different state when the machine, or on my way to a different state when the machine breaks down. So I just wanted to like give a big fat public shout out to Jason Farrar, owner of Commonwealth Coffee. Jason was down and working on my machine like within an hour and a half of me calling him. And that was in morning Denver traffic. So he must have left like immediately. He like dove on it. I like called him and said, hey, I am on my way to get on a plane. I have a barely trained guy behind the counter and the machine's down. He's like, I'm on it, you know? So he went down there and just totally knocked it out of the park. So it's kind of been like that. And like, I went through TSA pre for the first time and all of my stuff was cool and it was super fast. But the guy behind me did something stupid and had something sketchy in his laptop bag, and it locked down the whole like belt, and like they were going, no, you can reach in and grab your stuff, but I couldn't reach it. So I'm standing there forever waiting on my stuff. It took me like five times longer than it should have to get through TSA pre because some idiot left like a pocket knife or some I don't know what it was in his laptop bag. I'm like, come on, dude, where are you? This is Bush League, you know, this is amateur hour, come on, man. So, and it's just been interesting, you know. So I got to LA yesterday, and you know, as I told you I was gonna do, I was like, I'm gonna go on a coffee crawl, and I looked up these new shops I want to see, and I'm gonna check out all this cool stuff. And there's this food hall over on in like Venice called Giusta that like got Bon Appetit, like one of the best in the country, and it's like real affordable and cool. And I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna go get a porchetta, and I'm gonna check out this Giusta place, take some pictures. It's gonna be awesome. And like, so and so I get my car, which did work out. The whole gold Hertz gold thing worked out really beautifully, fast. And so I get my car. I start driving in LA, Like inside of 5 minutes, I've pulled over in a parking lot. I've switched my Google map to Malibu. And I'm like, get me onto the 10 and then the 1 as quickly as possible. I want out of here. It's just, oh my gosh. So sure enough, I drove up the 1 yesterday. And just like I said, just like I predicted, I mean, Malibu, you know, Santa Monica, feel a little better. Malibu, feeling quite a bit better. Right about Pepperdine, I can breathe. And then right about, like, Point Magoo, that area up there, Point Doom, something like that. It's like okay, I'm home. Okay, I'm out of the like, craziness. I'm telling you, man is not built to be strapped in a big piece of machinery and around that many other people strapped in a big piece of machinery. It's just not natural in a very literal sense. It's technological, but it's in a non-literal sense, it's just not how we're built to be. And it freaks me out. Maybe I'm just getting old, but like I used to be able to handle LA traffic and I drive in stupid Denver traffic, but man, LA is just kind of dangerous. I think I've lost my ability to drive in LA traffic because I'm driving in Denver traffic, and it's a different kind of traffic. And so I've lost my LA skill by gaining my Denver skill. So there you go. There's my little travel epic. All right. So last night was spectacular. Foot was still hurting. That kind of sucked. But met up with Los Marings and Los Collinses and Los Schneers, and we went down to segment. So after a little distraction, we all ended up going towards LA. So I was going back to LA again. So at least I wasn't driving, and Justin drives in LA every day, so pretty much. So he's got it down, and he's not freaked out by it like I am. So we go down to L.A. We get there a little late, and we go to Son of a Gun. Now, Son of a Gun is a really cool restaurant. This is all like them, you know, we're celebrating my feast day, right? We're going to see Over the Rhine play the Troubadour, and we're going to – so we go to Son of a Gun. And Son of a Gun is kind of a seafood-centric restaurant that's – in the same family of restaurants from the guys that started Animal a few years ago. And Animal, I've never been, and it's on my bucket list, and it was right around the corner, but I wasn't picking the restaurant, and they picked Son of a Gun. And I was like, probably wouldn't have been good because I would have eaten a bunch of naughty bits and it would have made my foot hurt worse if that was the arthritis that I was having. So, but we went to Son of a Gun, and it was a blast. It was so cool, and it was so good. And I had this, like, really nice oyster. And we had, trout almondine. And I forget how much I like trout. Trout is so good. I should eat trout way more often. I live in Colorado. There's so much trout in Colorado, and I don't eat it. So, yeah, so we did that. So that was fun. But then we went over to Troubadour, and the Troubadour is a great venue. If you ever get a chance to see a band you like at the Troubadour, go do it. It's just a really killer venue, a really well-run venue. They seem to keep their staff for a very long time. I've heard a couple different bands mention that, like bands that come through will like thank the bartender and thank the people from like the stage because they know them all because they've been there for a while. So the Troubadour is a good venue, West Hollywood. But I went and saw Over the Rhine, and you've heard me go. I did an entire show about my love of Over the Rhine after they were in Boulder last time. There's like this prairie dog or like some kind of like critter, a fat squirrel looking thing that's just like checking me out. He's sitting on one of these rocks. They're all through these rocks. And he's just like checking me out. So I don't have time to talk about Over the Rhine. Let's go to the break. Me and my little furry buddy here are going to hang out for while you listen to some commercials. All right, you're listening to The Counter Position on the beach episode, Ventura, California. Let's go to the break, and I'll see you on the other side.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we are, episode 256, Counter Position on the road, Ventura, California, the beachisode, ladies and gentlemen. I am on the State Beaches exit, which I guess technically is the one, but it's like feet from the 101. And I'm sitting at the beach in my rental car here, just doing a show, watching the waves crash, hanging out with this furry little buddy of mine. I've got I can't remember what they call these here. They're like prairie dogs, I guess. They're like they're not hedgehogs. They're, you know, like these little they're like little fat squirrel looking things that kind of sit up straight. I think they're prairie dogs, but they sit in these big rocks, these big boulders that separate the road from the surf. They just hang out in there all the time. I remember seeing them all the time when I lived here, but this little guy just like popped up and he's sitting on a rock staring at me. He's like literally hanging out with me. Oh, maybe once I get done, if he's still there, I'll try to get a picture of the little guy. anyway, so let's get back to last night and what I was talking about. All right, so you know, before I'm gonna end talking about Over the Rhine and about music and about some stuff about that, but. So I just, every time I come stay with my friends out here, all of my friends have kids. I'm the only single dude floating around this set. Everybody, and because they're all fairly traditional Catholics, they all have a lot of kids. So, speaking of, shout out to Rory and Carenza on brand new little baby number 9. Declan, I think his name is, down in Dallas, Texas. Yeah, so that's where my friends are. That's like the numbers they're rocking. Like my little goddaughter that I was playing with today, she is in last night. She's number 7 of 8. You know, so all of my friends have like 5 to 9 kids. So there's like anything when I come out here, I go from being mostly single dude in Denver hanging out with other young adults who are like all single and stuff to being the only single person in the room and just like getting dog piled by tons of kids. And that's I need that. That's good. I definitely need that. I totally got dog piled when I came in the first day too. And so I want to talk about my goddaughter Ren. So I have this little goddaughter named Ren Priscilla and I love her to pieces and she's super cute. And getting cuter by the day, and all of their kids are like kind of skinny except mine. My goddaughter is like, she's kind of a chunky fat baby still, and yeah, she's god daddy's girl for sure. But you know, it's funny, after the first time I saw her, she was like, you know, kind of, she didn't get to see me very often, you know, so every time I'd see her, the other kids are all like, look at your goddaughter, and they would try to like throw her in my lap, and it would scare her, and she'd freak out, and then it would take 3 days for her not to be scared of me, because she's not used to seeing me, and they all threw her at me. So this time around, sure enough, they came in, and they ran up on my lap, hey, say hi to your goddaughter. And she seemed to kind of be okay with the whole thing. She was like all smiling and hanging out there. So I'm like, yes, I finally got some goddaughter time right off the bat. And she hasn't been, she's been digging me the whole trip. So, for someone who's single, that's an important thing. We need that goddaughter time. And so, so last night we're getting ready to get going and just like, so I live a pretty selfish life. I just live just like it's me. Now on one side, it's selfish. On one side, it's like St. Paul said, you know, it's like if you're married and you have a family, you have to think about the things of this world and about your family. If you're not, then you can just focus on the things of God. And we think about that as mostly like religious life and priests and nuns and monks and all that. But if you're a single man or a single woman and you're just working in, you know, ministry, it's, you know, you kind of have a certain freedom to kind of give yourself to certain things other than family in a way that isn't selfish. But you couldn't do that if you were being unselfish and giving yourself to a family, you know? And so it comforts me sometimes when I ponder how old I am and how single I am. So we need that, you know, but every time I'm hanging out with these families, I just go like, man, how do you guys get anything done? It's like, it just amazes me. So last night we're hanging out, my little goddaughter wasn't really using her left arm very well. She just wasn't using it. She was just favoring her right arm and not really moving her left arm. And one of the kids was like, oh yeah, her and her brother were wrestling and she started crying and now she's not moving her arm. So Justin, like, you know, checks her out, and our best guess is that it was like kind of like popped out a little bit or something. And so we had to, like, before we could go to LA, we had to take this little baby girl to the doctor. They're not baby, but she's like two. So we had to take her to the doctor. So we're just trying to get out the door and get to dinner on time. And it's like, we got to take the kid to the doctor. And I'm like, how do you guys get anything done at all? And, you know, this morning I was talking to Hope and she was holding the brand new little baby Mercy. And, you know, and my goddaughter is like clamoring on her and kind of wanting all this, want attention from her. And she's handling two kids and listening to my story and asking me good questions and having a conversation. And then, like, I'm trying to finish my story and talking to her, and she picks the baby, she's nursing the baby, picks baby up, baby's like fussy, baby pukes all over the place, and she just doesn't, like, I'm like, oh god, like, the world has ended, we have to stop everything we're doing because there's baby puke. And she just, like, keeps having the conversation, walks carrying the baby, goes and gets something, cleans up the baby puke, keeps on. I'm just like, you're like an X-Men. You're like this, you have a superpower. Like, you have patience and just kind of like determination that there's no way in the world I would have. Now, I could keep firing through a machine that breaks down or something like that and keep going and keep traveling even though I'm in pain or something like that. But the level of getting things done and continuing to try to get something done, continuing to try to teach a kid something, continuing to try to cook something after just like craziness goes on in a family is like a superpower. I'm like, I could never do it. And I'm assuming you get some grace when you make a baby, get married, and, you know, and all that, you know, I guess you get some daddy graces and you learn on the job. And you get better at it over time. And I'm assuming that by number eight, you've kind of got it down at this point. But it's like watching somebody fly or shoot lasers out of their eyes or something. It's that level of superpower. Because there's just no way I could do that. It's just, there's absolutely no way I could do that. So it's just, this is just kind of a shout out to all you families out there. Like, all you dads, all you moms. I mean, Justin, God love him. I mean, Justin works harder and gets more done and has got more cool projects and business stuff going on than anybody I know. And he does all that and manages to, like, have eight kids and a wife. And it's just like, I'm like, how do you do that? It's like a superpower. Yeah. So that's my observation of what it's like being a single guy hanging out with families. But I figured out some things that we can learn from kids. You can learn a lot from kids. I can learn a lot from kids. And I think we're about to get a train come by here, by the way. So if you get a new level of noise happening on top of the waves, this is just part of the beach episode. The beach is right next to the train track. So, you know, you can't have the beach episode without the train. Oh, it's just a tiny little train going really slow. I thought it was going to be one of those huge Amtrak trains that makes a lot of noise. You can learn a lot from kids. And what do I mean by learning a lot from kids? So maybe about like evangelization or reaching people or something. So sometimes we want to do something and we're trying to do the right thing. So, and you're just like, hey, you're making it worse in some way. So this morning I'm sleeping in the den and I wake up to two little kids, like, standing at the edge of my bed and trying to crawl into bed and asking me questions, like, while I'm asleep. Which, I know all of you people who are family people are going, yeah, I wake up every day to little kids. That's how I wake up, a little kid. I'm single. I'm not used to like waking up and there's another person in the room, even a little kid, especially a little kid. You know, that would be weird. I don't have little kids hanging out in my house. It's like I normally wake up to an alarm clock, okay? Not a kid. So I got like kids. Hey, what's up? Get out of here. I'm trying to sleep. Totally grumpy. So they left, no problem. Like, hey, you know, okay. And they go, and I close the door behind them. And then little Maury, I mean, he wants to help. He's got it. He got the point. He's down for helping. All right? So what does little Maury do? He stands outside my door, which there's like a big gap under the door. It's like a thin door. He stands outside the door, and every time any kid comes anywhere near my room, he goes, "Don't go in there. Andrew Whaley's sleeping." So, I'm laying there cracking up, trying to go back to sleep, because little Maury's like trying to help. He's like trying to keep people from waking me up, and he's standing outside my door saying really loud, "Andrew Whaley is sleeping in there," to wake him up. So, you know, the scripture says that a loud blessing early in the morning is taken as a curse. I think this was somewhere between that and a blessing. So, you know, the little guy had my back. You know, he just needs to work on his method. Now, I'll tell you, okay, when we get back from the break, I'll tell you one more quick story about a little kid waking me up. Just this is the beach episode. This is how it rolls. This is completely random. It's like that's the way we do the beach episode. There'll be a more focused episode tomorrow. All right, you're listening to the super random beach episode, Ventura, California. It's Counter Position. We'll be back in a second.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash. All the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on the Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, it is Counter Position on the road, Ventura, California. I am sitting next to the beautiful Pacific Ocean, watching really great waves roll in. Getting more vitamin D than I've had in a while. Just straight up sun, serious sun coming down. And I'm kind of wishing I'd have put on shorts. And yeah, so we're doing the random kind of fun little thing that we like to call the beachisode. It's a little more laid back than the average counter position. And you're like, dude, you are always super random. Right, but this is a different flavor of random. This is the beachisode flavor of random. All right, so I promise you another story about getting awakened. I am bad at grammar. Getting rousted from sleep by a little kid. So another one of Justin's kids, Henry. I mean, he's like in his early teens now, I think, or something. You know, it's like, but when he was Maury's age, I mean, like four or five, I think. I was staying at their house over in Fillmore, and I just spent the night, and they had this little extra bedroom, and I'm sleeping in it, and I'm facing kind of towards the wall on my side asleep, and I'm in a deep sleep. And in my dream, I'm like, something's like, there's an earthquake or something, like these little tremors, and we're trying to figure it out, and they're kind of pulsing little tremors, and then I finally kind of start waking up, and I realize that I'm feeling these tremors, like, in the bed. And I roll over, and there's Henry. And he's standing at the edge of the bed, kind of rocking back and forth, bumping the bed with his knees. And when he sees that I'm awake, he's just smiling ear to ear, and he goes, "Hey, Andrew Whaley, are you having a good sleep, Andrew Whaley?" I was just like, well, I was. Yeah, you were really sleeping. You were sleeping hard. You were snoring. And I'm like, all right, yeah. Yeah, so it's like, so I still tease Henry. It embarrasses him now that he once woke me up. He woke me up to ask me if I was having a good sleep. You know, basically what this is all under the same rubric is that when little kids have a guest over, especially one that they like, that's fun and chases them around and tickles them and throws them in the air and stuff like that, and he's there and they can't get to him because and they can't play the games and do the thing and ask the questions, kids are not the most patient people in the world, and we are not the most patient people. I'm certainly not the most patient person in the world. So that's what it comes down to, is little kids are impatient. All right, so enough with little kids and being awakened in traditional random Beach Soap manner. Let's switch to Over the Rhine and the show last night. So Over the Rhine, as I said, as I mentioned when I told you guys I was coming out here, like Sufjan Stevens and like some of these other players, they have done Christmas albums along the way. And the genre they refer to it as is reality Christmas. So it's kind of the full range of human emotions in this time of year. You know, not just, you know, the joy and warmth. I mean, they, you know, it's songs about kind of like missing people and the darkness of this time of year and kind of like longing and, you know, there's this in struggle. They even covered they covered that Merle Haggard song, what was it, If We Can Make It Through December, or If We Get Through December, something like that. So it's a little more soulful, a little more, but yeah, they jokingly refer to it as reality Christmas. And every year they have a handful of shows where they play this Christmas set. Now, I was both excited and a little bummed because I've seen them so many times, and last night about half their set wasn't Christmas music. They decided to, like, they hadn't played LA in a while, and they decided to just kind of, you know, give people some of the songs they wanted to hear on top of that. And that's fine because I heard them play some songs I haven't ever heard them play, and they were mixing it up, some stuff off my favorite records, one of my favorite records, Good Dog, Bad Dog, and one off of Ohio, two really great records by Over the Rhine. And I don't know what to tell you. It's just recently when I was reading all those journals from the 90s, I was just kind of trying to set the mood, because I was trying to get a feel for who. Oh, I'm getting attacked by the bee. All right, go away, bee. I'm telling you, bees and prairie dogs and waves, oh my. You know, when I was listening, when I was reading those journals, I was just trying to recreate the mood to try to get a real bead on kind of who I was and what I was feeling at that moment, you know, I just hadn't read those journals in a while. And I saw I was casting around for some music, and I was trying to listen to some modern stuff, kill two birds with one stone, and listen to some modern music that I've been wanting to catch up on. And it's no, that's not the thing to do. And I tried a couple different things, and then I was like, okay, it's cliche, I always do this, but let's try it. Sure enough, Over the Rhine, Till We Have Faces and Patience. Those two records. Till We Have Faces and Patience by Over the Rhine. 91, 92 era. Just record albums that are like old friends that can immediately put you back into a place, back into a moment. And it's like, you know, if you, I'm not going to ramble too hard on that. If you go back through the podcast and find the episode that I talked about the death of Prince, you can, I think it's the fourth segment in there, the second half of the third and the fourth segment, I talk about this ability of music to transport us and kind of like, you know, kind of be almost like a distributed part of our memory that can kind of activate stuff. It's pretty interesting, but I just needed Over the Rhine to do what I needed to do. And I just got to thinking about it as I saw Karen and Linford playing on stage, and I didn't get to see them last night. They didn't come out and sell records or anything. And I never got to talk to them last night. And this is a band I've been into since the early 90s. And so I've been to enough shows from over enough years that when I run into them, they're like, hey, what's going on? They know who I am. And they say hi, you know, and ask me how I've been, you know. But we didn't get to really talk to them last night. But here's these two people that I don't really know very well. They've even invited me to come to their ranch and interview them at some point, their farm, in Ohio next time I go to Cincinnati to see Tim Ferlin. And but they were out of town the last time I went to Cincinnati. They were down in New Mexico at this arts and songwriters workshop that I almost went to. They ironically came where I was, or near where I was, and I went to them. But just here's these two people, and they're making, and they're living their life and going through stuff, and they're making things that express themselves. You know, they're expressing their own experience of life. You know, like Perry West, my roommate and friend, and for a long time, this kid just like he expresses what he's going through. But then a great songwriter can express what they're experiencing in the particular right then, and it can become kind of a universal archetype. It can become something that you can plug into, and through their words and through their capture of their experience, you can feel or experience your experience of the world. That's what makes a great songwriter, at least one of the things that makes a great songwriter. And so there's that, but then just seeing these people just playing music and doing their thing and just thinking about how integral what they do has become to my life, to where they were so integrated into a part of my life that when I was trying to read the journals from my deepest thoughts of my own during that time, I couldn't really do it without their soundtrack. It just wasn't, there was something missing without the soundtrack. And it had to be because they were the ones that were with me when that happened. With me in the sense of like their CD was on in the corner, you know? And so I had to, it was like watching a movie that you're used to, that you've watched 1,000 times, like your favorite movie. Like picture if you watch like Star Wars, but then there was a different soundtrack going to it. That would just be weird. Right. And I realized when I was reading those journals that these two people and their work have become the soundtrack to the movie that is my memory and my experience of that part of my life. And I just thought, what a beautiful thing to be able to do. What a beautiful relationship to have with someone. It's just, it's very intimate. And I mean, I think only the greatest artists can do that. And only the greatest artist can you have that kind of relationship with. I mean, there's always like, oh, you hear that one hit wonder that was kind of a cheesy song, but it takes you back to that summer that, you know, I mean, there's that kind of thing. Yeah. But like my experience of listening to R.E.M. Green, buying it on the day that I had like a nervous breakdown when I was 18, and listening to it on repeat all summer while I was kind of putting myself back together. I was going through one of the darkest times of my life. I mean, that I am eternally connected to that particular record. I am eternally connected to those songs. Now, do I know Michael Stipe? No, never met the man. Closest I've come is I'm friends with Bill Mowney from the Vigilantes of Love, and he lived across the alley from Peter Buck in Athens. Closest I've ever got to Michael Stipe, other than seeing him on the Green Tour at one point. But I have nothing in common with Michael Stipe, I wouldn't think. He's a very different dude. He's extremely, extremely left-wing. He's older than me. As best I can understand, he's gay. And we're very different people, politically, philosophically, everything. But his experience of reality captured and expressed through that record is eternally tied to my insertion of my experience of reality into those concepts as archetypes. And Over the Rhine was that most in a huge way for me. And I experienced it again on stage last night. And in classic counterposition style, we're out of time. This has been the Beach Episode. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.